I feel like it'll go better this way because I sort of hated to introduce my topic and then immediately leave the topic for 2 weeks while I had to be away. So our class for the next several weeks is in some ways just an extension of Mike's class from the last several months, although it's quite different on several levels. We call this our Bible study time, but you're going to find it ironic. For the next 8 weeks, we're actually not going to talk about the Bible very much at all. And so you're thinking, so what in the world are we going to talk about during a Bible study? We're going to talk about other religions, basically. World religions, whatever you want to call it. And that may not sound especially interesting to you, but I definitely think it's worth our time to consider other religions. And of course, we'll talk about them in the context of Christianity and in contrast to Christianity. And I feel like it's a valuable discussion, but I want to hear your thoughts. Why would it be worth our time to talk about other religions?
Well, it would help us to know how to talk to our friends.
Sure. Sure, exactly. And let's be honest, though. This is Southwest Missouri. Is there a whole lot of people in this area that are anything other than Christian? Really. I mean, there's not a lot. I've run into a few people, but there's just not a lot of people in this area that aren't Christian. So you're exactly right, Duane. It's valuable to know other religions besides the Christian faith. But in a practical sense, you know, I could easily imagine going the rest of my life and never having just a really deep discussion with someone who wasn't a Christian. So I've never had that kind of discussion. I hope to, of course. So that's definitely a valuable point. There's probably other reasons, though, too. Why else would it be valuable to talk about other religions besides the Christian faith?
One of the things that I think about is when you see some of the things people do, it shows how powerful Satan is and how he has deceived the whole world.
Sure, sure. And that kind of leads into the point that I wanted to make. And this is basically the main reason that I think it's worth talking about these religions. And I'll give you an example. I got to pick the right person for this question. If I pick the wrong person for this question, then it kind of blows the analogy. So, I'm going to go with Theta. I may have picked the wrong person. We'll find out. What is your favorite kind of meat? Well, let me ask you like this. What would you rather have? Would you rather have a beef sirloin or a horse sirloin? You like it? I knew this could happen. That wasn't the cop-out I was expecting. But... All right. Bob, let's try you over here. Which would you rather have, a beef sirloin or a horse sirloin?
Well, I've never had a horse sirloin, so I guess I would probably choose beef.
Well, sure. Of course you would. And that's kind of the point. Do you like horse sirloin?
I don't know.
You don't know. Exactly. Well, that's kind of where probably most of us are when it comes to other religions. How much do you really know about other religions? I don't know very much. In fact, I'm starting this class today, and I still don't know very much. The only religion I've studied to this point is Hinduism, and I actually feel like I know less about Hinduism now than I did before I started studying. And once we get into that, you'll understand why. When I was a senior in college, I took it was a capstone course, and the professor had a point to make, which is different than the point I'm making now, but it was really interesting what she did. It was just a little quiz. It obviously wasn't worth any points because we all would have failed, but she just asked us several questions, simple questions about other religions, and you know, one of them was, name all of the religions that you're aware of, okay? And of course, there's hundreds of them, but any given person, you know, can maybe list 10 or 12 at the very most. I mean, think about it. How many religions can you even name? Don't answer that for me. But here's one I do want you to try to answer. Name some religious holy text besides the Bible. And can you think of anything else?
You might say the Quran.
Yeah, Quran. Okay, so the Bible, Quran.
Book of Mormon.
Yeah, that counts.
For Mormon version.
What's that?
The Dewey Version.
I don't even know what that is.
It's the Catholic Bible.
Oh, I thought that was like a cataloging system for a library. Guess not. Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And so, see, if I was grading this quiz, I would say that doesn't count, because that's just a version of the Christian Bible, right? Essentially, it's kind of the version of. Okay, who knows the holy books for Hinduism? Yeah, I was the same way until about 2 weeks ago. What about Buddhism or Jainism or Confucianism or any other religion? See, that's kind of the dilemma that we have. That's just the reality of our situation. In some ways, it's not very fair. I mean, we've made the decision that these other religions are illegitimate, and at the conclusion of this class, I think we'll feel even stronger that these other religions are illegitimate. But reality is, we just don't know very much about other religions, and so it makes our position a little bit unfair, I think. And so I think, just to justify where we stand on things, it's important to at least understand religions, you know, at a minimum on a superficial level. And that would include, you know, understanding the books, the text that these religions come from.
I was going to say, that's really a very valid reason for studying this. It's because we condemn them, but we don't know much about them.
Right.
You've got to be careful about condemning someone if you don't really know exactly.
Right.
On the other hand, if we know that God is truth and there's only one way.
Sure. Sure.
And there's only one truth, and that excludes all others.
Sure.
So we don't have to know.
Right. And that's
everything, but
right.
It doesn't make your point invalid either.
But you bring up a good point. Especially from a Christian perspective, the Christian faith excludes all other religions. So, you know, if we can, just in Christianity, if we can find persuasive evidence, which I think we do, that this is the right way, I mean, how many wrong ways do we have to investigate to still be sure that this is the right way? You know, so it is true. That is a good point. Go ahead.
One point I think we should keep in mind is we need to be as wise as serpents and harmless as doves.
Sure, yeah.
When we approach other people of different religions.
Exactly. Have you ever read criticisms on Christianity from someone who wasn't Christian, obviously? And how often do you notice that they don't even get Christianity? Well, that happens a lot. And I'm sure when we criticize other religions, I'm sure those people might feel the same way. Well, they don't even get Islam. They don't even get Hinduism. And, you know, obviously I would never encourage this, but the only real way to get a religion is to indulge in it, at least in some form. I mean, you and I are going to get Christianity far more than someone who just studies it as an outsider. So obviously we're going to be limited in this study. It's going to be impossible for us to ever know any other religion as well as we know Christianity. But we don't have to know everything. We just have to know enough to make a rational, justifiable decision about whether or not that these other religions are worth our attention. So let's get into some other basic questions about world religions that I feel like we need to answer. And first is this. What are some of the things that we should be looking for when we study other religions? What do you need to know about a religion that's going to validate it or invalidate it? Just big ideas. We talked about one thing already, the holy text, the books. You know, we need to know about them. Where do those books come from? When did they come from?
Who is the founder, and can he save my soul?
Sure, yeah, and I just have that listed as origin. Where did this religion come from? Which I think tells us a lot about a religion. Anything else you think we have to understand about a religion to make a rational decision on it?
Who do they pray for?
Okay, so we need to know about the gods or God in their religion. That's good.
I know that there's a lot of religions that are established or formed to try to explain what happens after death.
Mm-hmm.
So their view or their stance on what happens when I die.
Yeah, those are all things that we'll want to know. And what's interesting, I'm yet to discover a religion that doesn't address the afterlife in some way. All the religions I've looked at, they address that on some level. Even if they don't believe in a God, there's lots of religions that don't believe in God, but they all believe in some type of existence outside of our present existence. So here's the four things that I have listed that we'll try to study for every religion. We'll look at the origin, which includes a lot of things, the founder, like Mike was mentioning, the date of origin, anything we can find out about the origin of the religion. We'll also look at the basic beliefs of that religion. Because that's important. We need to know kind of what this religion teaches to even know if this religion makes sense to us. We also need to know what the holy books are for this religion. And then apologetics. And what I mean by that is just justification for the religion. There's a lot of religions that we won't even try to study because there are no apologetics behind them. And I'll give you an example. I was going to mention this later, but I'll go ahead and mention it now. Some of the oldest religions in the world, or I should say the oldest religion in the world, is not Judaism. Judaism was established, obviously, by who?
Abraham.
Yeah, the initial covenant, but as far as...
Moses.
Yeah, the initial covenant came through Abraham, but there was no formal religion until Moses. Yeah, so we're both right here. I look at it in terms of the actual establishment of a law and the establishment of an organized religion. And that was in about 1400 B.C. is when Moses gave his law. And there's a number of religions and holy texts that are older than that. So as far as I can tell, the oldest recorded holy writings are Egyptian inscriptions. But in my mind, there's no need to study those because it's just these random writings. They're not coherent. And there's no way to prove if they're right or wrong. There's no way of legitimizing those writings. So if they're right, we wouldn't know. And so there's no point in studying it. So there's a lot of religions we won't study for that reason. That's what I mean by apologetics. The proof that this religion is good, bad, right, or wrong. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah, I was just, since we're in introduction, mm-hmm. you probably plan to do that. I would like to hear, kind of at the end of this, why are there all these other religions? Mm-hmm. What brought them on? Of course, I think of idolatry as being the very first, kind of the first thing,
sure.
Or having other gods. But
yeah.
What's the purpose in all there? Why so many of them?
Yeah, and we'll talk about that some with each religion when we go through the origin. For some religions, there's an obvious explanation for where it came from and why it exists, and then for others, there's no explanation at all except that people were looking for answers. And that brings me to my next question. Why do people seek religion in the first place? In the bigger picture of things, there's very few people in this world, very, very few people in this world, that don't fall inside of some religion. I mean, there's a few pure atheists that are completely anti-religion on every level. But even those people, I think, are looking for the same answers that we're looking for inside of the religion. They just look for it outside of religion. So that's the question. Why do people seek religion?
They want to think there's something besides just what we have.
Yeah.
I think there's something else.
Yeah, exactly. And, when we look at our physical world, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, it makes sense that there's got to be something else. And so that's what religion helps to explain. What other reasons do we seek religion?
I think one of the common things you hear is, what is my purpose?
Yep, that's second on my list, to explain my purpose. Why am I even here? Do I have a job to do on this planet?
And there is a bit of eternity in each person, isn't there? Isn't that correct? In all people, there's a bit of eternity.
Sure, I think that goes along with Peter's statement that we all just have this, and I think this points to the idea of there being a God, but we all have this notion that there's something other than this present world that we need to try to find. So the first thing I had on my list was, why do we seek religion? To explain our origin. Everybody wants to know where we came from, which is very closely related to, what is my purpose? Why am I even here in the first place? We also seek religion to give meaning to our existence, which is, pretty much the same as to explain our purpose. Also to give meaning to our universe. We ask the question, why am I here? But it's natural to also ask the question, why is anything here? Why does this universe exist at all? There's got to be an explanation for that. Well, there is an explanation. And most people, the overwhelming majority of people, seek that explanation through religion. And then again, still related to that, we seek religion to explain why there is something rather than nothing. I said that the overwhelming majority of people seek this inside of religion. But even an atheist, do they still want answers to these questions? Just think of someone that does not believe in God at all. Do they still want to explain their origin? Absolutely. That's where the theory of evolution came from. Do they still want to explain, have some purpose in their life? Well, of course they do. Even if they believe that their purpose is whatever they believe their purpose to be, they still have to make that decision. They still have to explain the origin of the universe. They still have to explain why there is something rather than nothing. Just some people do it outside of religion. Why would someone even want to do that outside of religion?
Religion is restrictive.
Exactly.
I guess what I'd say.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Religion is inherently restrictive in most forms. And if you can answer these questions outside of religion, you have no obligations to anyone. And that's why there are a few people in the world that prefer to answer these questions without religion. A few other things by way of introduction, as far as the purpose of this class. I think this will be a faith-building exercise. I think, go ahead. Sorry.
What was those main 4 points you mentioned there at first? Origin, apologetics, and there were two
other things. We'll study the origin, basic beliefs, the holy books, and then apologetics. Those four things. To the extent that they're even available. As far as the purpose of this class, like I said, I think this will be a faith-building exercise. We have to study these religions, obviously as Christians, but at least temporarily entertaining the idea. To be fair, we have to entertain the idea that there might be some legitimacy to these religions. You know, when we study with someone who's not a Christian, don't we expect the same thing from them? We study with someone who is a Christian, maybe, but doesn't believe the same things that we do. Don't we expect them, at least for the purposes of that study, to entertain the idea that they might be wrong and we might be right? Well, that's the only way to have a rational discussion, to have a fair discussion. We have to do the same thing with these religions. We have to at least initially assume that there's a chance that they could be right. Otherwise, they won't have a fair chance, and I don't think we can come to a fair conclusion. So that's why this is a faith-building exercise. And trust me, I think at the end of this, we'll be stronger because of it. Also, like Dwayne mentioned, another purpose of this is to understanding other religions is necessary to understand other people at all. There's a lot of other people in this world that aren't Christians. Now, it is true that most people who are religious at all are Christians, but that doesn't necessarily mean that most people are Christians. And so it's important to understand people to understand their religion. Also, I feel like studying other religions provides a context to the Christian faith. There were lots of religions that came before Christianity. Can you name a few that came before Christianity? Obviously, Judaism, but what else? Well, sure, paganism in all of its forms. Hinduism came before Christianity. Buddhism came before Christianity. The overwhelming majority of all Eastern religions came before Christianity. And so the better we understand those religions, the better we can understand Christianity and the context in which Christianity was established. So all of that will be a profitable study. By the way, when am I supposed to ring the bell?
10 after.
Oh, 10 after. Okay, so we've got a lot of time. Any other comments as far as an introduction?
I'm going to be interested to see how many of these different religions have something to say about the what?
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think there are a lot that talk some about the flood. Unfortunately, from what I've found so far, some of the religions that do talk about the flood, we won't be talking about here. And so that kind of brings me to the next point. So I feel like we have to make some initial assumptions. I feel like we've got to make some initial assumptions about religion before we move into a discussion on specific religions. And here's my basic assumption. Something must be responsible for the universe. Does everyone agree with that? That's what I believe. I feel like when you look at this physical world, our physical universe, you have to believe that something is responsible for it. It has a cause. And so that also means that the force or forces that are responsible for the universe are obviously greater than the universe and exist outside of the laws of this universe. Now that is going to start to sound a little bit abstract, but here's the point. Atheism is not a rational explanation. That's what I'm getting to with this. Something, someone, must be responsible for the universe. And atheism assumes that nothing is responsible for the existence of the universe. And so I feel like before we even move into specific religions, we have to basically narrow the field. Like I said already, there's a lot of religions that are atheist. Buddhism is atheistic. Confucianism is atheistic. Jainism, in general, the followers of that religion are atheists, which means they don't believe in God. They don't believe that there is some type of supernatural power, some supernatural person behind the existence of the universe. And I'm just not prepared to even go there. So give me your thoughts on that. Obviously, I told you how I feel. Would you be prepared to entertain a religion that doesn't accept the idea of an all-powerful creator responsible for the universe? I mean, that creator may come in many forms. It may be creators as opposed to a creator. But I can't buy into a religion that says that, you know, this world is all there is. That's kind of a big question to ask you to answer right now.
No, but it's different sometimes in their perspective if they've been raised that way.
Sure, absolutely.
When they were born or that.
Absolutely, which may be part of the reason why, you know, obviously we're all conditioned to believe that there must be a God behind this universe, and, you know, someone who wasn't raised that way, they're going to feel just the opposite. They might think it's absurd that we actually believe that there's some God that exists outside of our existence who's responsible for everything. Go ahead, Mike.
I think much of NASA and many scientists fall into this category because it seems that the whole reason for what they do is to prove there is not a God.
Oh, sure.
Proving, like just this week, you know, they said they got some pictures back from Mars that they say now proves there was water on Mars, which proves there could have been life on Mars. You know, the whole thing is a continuing effort, I believe, to show, you know, that there really is no God.
Right. And the reason...
That's atheism, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, there are a lot of people who are in that field that aren't atheists,
right. But
most are. I mean, you know, for example, Albert Einstein, who is an extraordinary scientist, mathematician, very much concerned with the origins of the universe. His conclusion was that there was a God. He definitely was not Christian. Absolutely not a Christian. But he concluded there has to be a God. And one of the reasons was that we exist. You know, how can we exist at all? Where did all this come from if there wasn't an originator for everything?
Concerning the scientist, you know, came out in the Kansas City Star one time years ago about the scientists, what they... You know, when they were trying to pinpoint their satellites in outer space,
mm-hmm. They
had to take in account for Hezekiah's time. There are two or three different times where God stopped the sun, you
mm-hmm.
know, and stopped it for the battle with Joshua, I think it was. And anyway, whenever they calculated those into their mathematics, they were able to pinpoint where they wanted to put a satellite.
I've heard that story before. That's interesting. So, let's talk a little bit about atheism. As I told you, atheism, this subject, I think, is going to exclude a lot of religions that we won't study, which in some way might seem a little bit unfair, but if the very premise of a religion is illegitimate, then, you know, why would we waste all of our time and energy to study that religion? So, let's talk about atheism, and the three reasons I think that atheism can't even be an option. By the way, I meant to say this just a second ago, Mike, when you were talking about how so many scientists, you know, obviously are looking for some other explanation for the origin of this universe besides God. Does anyone know the name Richard Dawkins? I'm sure a lot of you have heard of that guy. He's pretty much the most outspoken atheist in the world right now. And he wrote a book called The God Delusion, for example. And it's a whole book about, you know, why people believe in God and how it's absurd that people believe in God. But what's interesting is most people that don't believe in God, it's not for scientific reasons. It's not for logical reasons. It's because that the gods that are presented in the world that are supposed to exist, they just don't like them. For example, one of the things that Richard Dawkins talks about in his book, The God Delusion, is how the God of the Mosaic Law is so bigoted on every level. Well, does that mean that there's not a God just because Richard Dawkins doesn't like the way that God thinks? Well, of course not. Just because you don't like God doesn't mean that he doesn't exist. And even if you don't think that you can find God inside of any of the present religions, still doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. And that's why I think it's actually good that I feel like we can prove the existence of God just from a few simple questions about science. There's three things I think you can ask that prove there must be some divine origin to this universe. And I'm sure you've heard these three questions before. What is the origin of the universe? Secondly, what is the origin of life? And then third, what is the origin of the human conscience? And there's several variations on those same questions. So let's talk about these briefly. And this will probably take up the rest of our time today, but I feel like it's a really important point to make. What is the origin of the universe? And interrupt me if you have something to add to this. The universe must have an origin. The current consensus of science says that the universe does have an origin. I was just yesterday looking at some research that was meant to prove that the Earth somehow doesn't have an origin, but all of our scientific laws, all of the mathematics that we can produce, all say that the Earth must have an origin. Even if someone doesn't believe in God, even if someone doesn't believe in a creator, everyone in the scientific community must admit that the universe did have a beginning. And I think there's one simple way that we can prove that. I might try to draw this on the board. This is a really hard concept to explain. I was trying to type it out so I knew how to say it, and I never really came up with anything last night. So if this doesn't make any sense at all, just turn me off and catch up in a couple minutes. Okay, let me give you an example. This is just one simple reason why the universe must have a beginning. If the universe doesn't have a beginning, what does that mean about the universe? Yeah, it's always been that the universe is eternal. Okay, so we're looking at this from the atheist perspective, that our universe is strictly physical in nature. Everything about the universe is physical in nature. And one explanation to avoid the idea that the universe has a beginning, doesn't have a beginning, is that the universe is eternal. Well, from a physical perspective, it's impossible for the universe to be eternal. It's not possible at all. And here's why. I believe this is the second law of thermodynamics, and it's called entropy. So I'll explain this as well as I can with as limited as my understanding is. The law of entropy basically says that things will steadily move from an organized state to a less organized state. And is that true? Unless acted on by some outside force inside of a closed system, everything will move from an organized state to a less organized state. Can you think of anything where that's not true? On all levels, I feel like that's true. If you take a pile of bricks and stack them out in your yard just as neatly as possible, are those bricks ever going to become more organized? No, of course not. What's the only possible thing that could happen? They'll become less organized on some level. And that process might be very, very, very slow, but over the course of time, eventually, you're not going to have a nice stack of bricks. Eventually, enough things will happen inside of this open system that you won't have a nice stack of bricks, you'll just have a pile of bricks, and maybe eventually there'll be no bricks at all. Well, the same thing is true of the universe. And it's especially true when it comes to energy and heat production. This is where it really gets abstract, and I'll try to explain this. So, energy also moves from an organized state to an unorganized state. In an open system, so unless there's some type of boundaries to contain the energy within a system, and you know this includes the universe. The universe is a system, an open system. The universe has no boundaries. Inside of the universe, there is energy. And over the course of time, energy is lost and dissipated in the form of heat. You know, that's just something we all know. And as energy is lost, the energy doesn't die. Energy can't go away. You probably remember the first law of thermodynamics, which is energy cannot be created or destroyed. It just changes forms. But energy becomes less and less available over time. Energy is used in the form of work, and then it's lost in the form of heat or some other dissipation of energy. So let me give you an example of what I mean. If I took a ball inside of this room and threw it, what's going to happen?
It's going to bounce around.
Yeah, it's going to bounce around for a little bit. And obviously, that ball has a lot of energy. As it's flying through the air, it has energy. But what happens as it bounces off the first wall? Is it going to come off the wall at the same speed? Why not?
Energy is transferred.
Yeah, energy is transferred into the wall. And can you collect the energy that was just deposited into the wall? Of course not. It's gone. I mean, the energy is still there, but it becomes useless to you. You know, if I take my fist and punch this pulpit, I just expended some energy, but can I recollect that energy and put it into a usable form? Of course not. Well, the same thing is happening in the universe. The universe, over the course of time, is losing energy. It's constantly losing energy, losing usable energy. I do need to try to draw this on the board. So this is a really simple graph. Okay, so say this is the level of energy that we have in our universe right now. So I'm going to draw a line from this. Which direction does the line need to go? Yeah, it needs to go this way, doesn't it? Right? So this is the direction that energy, available energy in the universe is going. Okay? So obviously the line came from somewhere this direction, right? This is what we're going to call time. Over time, there's a decrease in energy, right? I really didn't mean for this to be so complicated. So let's get rid of this. If there is not a beginning of time, where does this line go? It just keeps going that way. And if this line can keep going up indefinitely, what does that mean? It would mean that there's an infinite amount of energy in the universe. And that's not possible. There is a finite amount of energy in the universe. And that's why the available amount of usable energy in the universe is slowly decreasing over time. As energy is transferred, it loses its usefulness. It can't be recollected. And so unless someone is going to try to suggest that there's an infinite amount of available energy in the universe, there has to be a beginning of time. Does that make sense at all? If it doesn't make sense, that's okay.
It's one of the reasons that stars burn out. There's a lot of energy. For example, our sun is a source of energy for our Earth.
Right.
Eventually, our sun, if time were permitted to continue on far enough, it would run out of its own internal energy and burn out, which is what we see with a lot of stars. So
that's a perfect example.
One of those proofs that in the universe, energy is finite. It is not eternal.
That's a really good example. Here's another way of explaining that. Is it possible for the sun to be eternal? Can you say that our sun has always existed? Of course not, because that would mean if it was eternal, if it had been going on for eternity, that means it... That would mean that it would have started with an indefinite or infinite amount of energy, which isn't possible. If the energy is decreasing, it has to have had an origin. Go ahead.
Yeah, bring it to a terrestrial example of our petroleum. We hear this all the time. We're running out of that fossil fuel or whatever.
Right, you know, right.
Whether it is or not, I mean, there may be still abundant supply, but it's going down, the supply of that energy from fossil fuel.
Exactly, which points to the fact that, well, it just like you say, it proves the point that we're making right now, that because we're moving from a state of order towards disorder, that's just one thing that shows us the universe must have had a beginning. If you start with perfect order, can there be anything before that? Of course not. There can't be anything before that. Everything after that becomes less perfect, and if you're at a state of perfect order, you can't exist before that. Anyway, that's sort of an abstract way of explaining that the universe must have had a beginning.
So the word change is very important. It happens. It's taking
sure.
place.
Yeah, exactly. So, given the fact that, just assume with me, even if that example made no sense at all, so given the fact that the universe does have a beginning, that leads to a lot of other really important questions, doesn't it? If the universe had a beginning, what does that mean? Sure, it will have an end. We know that. It definitely will have an end. And as far as the origin is concerned, if something started, you have to ask why. Why did it start? If something is here, why is it here? And in atheism, there's no explanation for that. How did matter come from non-matter? Well, it's impossible. Unless, of course, there's some divine origin to the universe. How did energy come from non-energy? It's impossible unless there's some type of divine origin to the universe. Why is there anything here at all? Well, there's no natural explanation for that unless there's something outside of this universe, not bound by the laws of this universe, that's responsible for the universe. If the cause of the creation of our universe was not God, there is no explanation for it. And just like Mike was saying, this is science. This is what science is currently struggling to do, to prove how there's some explanation for this universe other than God. And, for example, one explanation currently is that somehow the universe was eternal. And the scientific community was debating this idea for the last decade or so, but what I just read yesterday said that they're sort of giving up on that idea because they really know that that's just impossible. In an open system where energy can be dissipated indefinitely and become useless, this has to have a beginning. So this is the fallacy of atheism. Atheism suggests that you can have something, but there be no reason for that something, no explanation for that something, no origin for the something, that it's just somehow there, and there doesn't have to be a reason for it. Atheism also violates a lot of other natural laws. The Genesis scenario that's portrayed in the atheist perspective, like I said, violates the law of entropy, that things tend to move from a state of order towards disorder. Also, atheism denies the fact that mass cannot be created or destroyed. This is the law of conservation of mass, which is very similar to the law of conservation of energy, which says that energy can also not be created or destroyed. But in an atheistic world, you have to have matter created from non-matter, right? Which is impossible. Unless, of course, there's a divine origin to that. Same thing for energy. Atheism assumes that energy somehow came from nowhere for no reason, with no cause, but for natural reasons, without a God. And of course, that's also impossible. So that's the first point. What is the universe of the origin? Well, there's just simply no explanation for the origin of the universe unless you're willing to accept that there might be a God. Any other comments on that point? Go ahead, Chris.
I have a friend who, well, sort of a friend, who is atheist, and she went to California, she came back atheist and meant friendship. So we discuss this often.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use the example of pocket watch of, it takes more faith for her to believe that pieces of the pocket watch have been put in a pouch and shaken until they become a pocket watch, versus me believing there's a watchmaker, even though I haven't seen them,
sure,
put it together. And she said, but you can't say that the random couldn't put that watch together. And I said, no, but it still doesn't explain where the pieces came from and who's doing the shaking.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
exactly.
I mean, we talk, it does come down to the origin.
Mm-hmm.
Because what something has to come out of nothing, and they have to have greater faith that that happened.
Sure.
Than for us to know that there is a God.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We're going to talk about that again on this next subject. So the first question was, what's the origin of the universe? And very closely related to that, I need to bring up that. Thanks.
Ted, on the other hand, though, you know, an atheist could say the same thing. They could say, well, you're saying, you know, where did God come from?
Mm-hmm.
If I say the earth came from nothing, as a scientist does, then they're saying, well, you say God came from nothing. Well,
sure.
You know, that's how we have to be able to explain to them, you know, God is divine and God is not physical. And,
right.
And
I was going to say, that would be my response.
He has no beginning and has no end.
Yeah, that's what makes God God.
He never changes.
He's outside of the universe. He's not bound by physical laws. And that's the problem with atheism. You have to explain physical things with physical explanations, and that's just not possible. So the next question is, what is the origin of life? Obviously, we don't have time to talk about that, but we'll talk about it next week. My hope is that we'll get through this short discussion on atheism. There's a few more introductory remarks that I'll make on studying world religions. And then the first religion that we'll study is Hinduism. And for everyone that has an email, there's a few online resources that I think are extremely valuable in studying these other religions. I don't have them written down here, so I'll send you an email with some resources. I feel like our discussions will go much, much better if you at least know something about the religion before we start the discussion. And if, I mean, it, you know, if you're not able to do that, nothing to feel bad about, but I feel like the class would be more productive for everyone if we can. Go ahead.
I want to state that I do believe what Mike was saying about the scientists. They are trying to disprove God.
Sure.
I would just mention what I did, because there are some Christian scientists that believe in the Bible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of them. They're definitely in the minority, but there are a lot of them. Okay, so like I said, Hinduism is the next religion that we'll consider, and maybe you all can make more sense out of it than I have so far. So we'll take a short break and reconvene in a few minutes.